Well, hi everyone, and welcome to the Modern Cotton Story, sponsored by E3 Sustainable Cotton from BASF. I'm Jennifer Crumpler, Fiber Development Manager and Manager of the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program, and I'll be the host of today's program. And today we're going to continue our series of podcasts we call Teaching Sustainability. So with this special series, I've been really excited to be able to introduce a very wide range of professors from higher education and universities who are really helping teach and educate around the topic of sustainability and transparency in the supply chain. And so we've been very fortunate to introduce, you know, the educators from the universities representing all different segments of that supply chain, including agriculture, textile, apparel, fashion, all the different ones. So we're going to continue with that today. And to help me do that, I'm joined by industry consultant Bob Anishak. So Bob, how are things going for you?
Jennifer, I'm doing fine today. Hope you are as well.
I am. And, you know, our listeners, it's very unfortunate that you guys couldn't be on for the beginning of the podcast. That'll be cut out a little bit because I'm really excited to have our special guest on today to join us. So Dr. Bill Robertson, he's a well-known cotton extension agronomist and a professor of cotton production at the University of Arkansas. So Dr. Robertson, how are you doing today? And thanks so much for joining us.
I'm doing wonderful today. And Jennifer and Bob, I'm very honored to be asked to participate in this podcast with you all today.
Yeah. And, you know, I know, Dr. Robertson, you've had a very accomplished career in the cotton industry. As an agronomist educator, you've been research, you know, just very accomplished. So I know you and I have had a chance to talk about many different things. And, you know, we mentioned to a lot of our listeners, we recently did a kit, our life cycle of a t-shirt kit, and that actually kind of stemmed from something you've been doing for many years in your research. And so we'll get into that a little bit later. But before we kind of jump in, I would really, you know, just see if you might would talk a little bit about your background and then maybe a little bit about, because, you know, your role is a little bit different in extension compared to, you know, the university compared to some others. So would love to just see if you would just kind of give us that background and maybe a little bit about what your current role is.
Thanks, Jennifer. And I really appreciate the kind words.
Okay, so accomplished.
You know, what does that really mean? It's almost like natural, you know. but anyway, I'm just a country boy at heart. I grew up on the southern high plains of Texas outside of Lubbock. Grew up on a farm and was very active in the farming growing up. And graduated high school in 1976, went to West Texas State University, graduated there in 1980. And then there, you know, I went to work for a sorghum seed company, worked for a plant breeder, and did that for about 5 years and decided that I wanted to go back to school. So I went down to A&M and did all my graduate work down there. And while I was there in my PhD program with Dr. Tom Cothran, I basically was in charge of a field research program. And so that gave me a lot of experience, because I knew the farming part, or was pretty comfortable with the farming part, but they gave me on the job training on doing research. And we did cotton was our main crop, but we did grain sorghum, we did corn, we did wheat and soybeans. So we did a lot of row spacing, fertility, just you name it, we did it, plant growth regulators. And then I moved to Arkansas in 1995, went to work with the University of Arkansas Cooperative Extension Service. And, been in Arkansas since 1995.
Well, that's a really great background, Bill. Mm-hmm. Man, oh man. So today, how do you describe what you're doing?
Well, you know, I came to Arkansas as a cotton agronomist, and I really feel like, as most agronomists, we really pay attention to what goes on from the soil surface up, looking at the plant, how the plant grows and all that. And, you know, I mentioned I moved to Arkansas in 1995, but I was here 12 growing seasons and had the opportunity to go to Memphis to work with the National Cotton Council, the lobbying organization for the U.S. cotton industry, and worked there 7.5 years and got involved with, as part of technical services there. But got involved with field to market and the field print calculator, working with Andy Jordan and Bill Norman, really got to understand the supply chain part. and their interest and their need for sustainability. And when we was doing that, I really began to focus a little more. There's a lot of things going on below the soil surface. And so I was there for a while. I've been back in Arkansas for about 6 years now. And it's kind of like I was on sabbatical when I was with the National Cotton Council. Now I come back and I'm really looking at a lot of things that go on below the soil surface. And when I started doing that, that helped explain some of the problems that we were having and why we did some of the things we did. And I really feel like that experience made me a better agronomist and can really kind of help some of the pieces of the puzzle were missing before, and they're there now because there's so many things with soil health that explain some of the problems that we have in production agriculture right now.
I have two questions for you.
Okay.
One is, and I get asked this a lot from the clothing business, what's an agronomist? Number one.
Okay.
Basics. Yeah. For you, it's very basic. Jennifer's very basic. But for a lot of other people downstream, they really have no idea. And secondly, having asked that question, what do you see as the future for cotton and the cotton industry? That's the bigger question.
Okay. Yeah, because sometimes, you know, I kind of forget about that, you know, being an agronomist, because, you know, sometimes, you know, go on trips, used to ride on airplanes some, but I tell them I'm an agronomist and they say, well, do you study stars? but basically, you know, the big deal is I work with producers, consultants, and then working with the university as a cotton specialist. One of my main jobs is really to provide resources and training for our county agents to be able to answer most of the questions that our stakeholders have, because, you know, I don't have time to be the county agent for all the counties in Arkansas. So I have to have them trained, but I do work with varieties for variety selection. So we look at variety performance. So we do irrigation work. We do fertility work. We do plant growth regulator work. We do harvest aid work and take all these things to yield. But as you know, there are some things we can do in our garden that a commercial vegetable person can't do when we take it to scale. And so really all the work that I do in Arkansas, I do in producer fields, and I do on field size levels. My plots are 6 rows because that's how wide our cotton harvesters are, and they run the length of the field. So everything I do is with a farmer on a farmer scale, because there's some things we can do in a small plot that really we cannot do commercially. But basically I work with producers to help tell them what are the best varieties to plant, when they need to irrigate, what fertility rates to use and so forth to help them be more profitable in what they do. Cause everything I do centers around trying to help producers in Arkansas be more profitable. And, the future of cotton, I think cotton still has a strong future in Arkansas. We're going through, you know, Mother Nature showed us a real curveball this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
And so sometimes, you know, life is hard. It seems hard. You know, the last 3 years, you know, well, I remember last year, you know, when we got to the end of 2020, everybody was saying, oh, thank goodness we're at the end of 2020 because next year has got to be better. Well, 2020 was nothing compared to 2021. And but we know cotton, we have the cotton infrastructure here, and we have in Arkansas, we're blessed to have the opportunity to grow a lot of different things, but cotton just fits our climate, our soil so well. And I think there's tremendous opportunity. But then when I say that, you know, when I look at not just cotton, but when I look at soybeans and corn production, in Arkansas, especially in our areas where we farm on silt loam soils, I feel like our most limiting factor for production is lack of soil structure. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of things that, you know, because we have lack of soil structure, we don't have good rooting. When we don't have good rooting, it's hard for the plant to get all the nutrients it needs. So we're seeing fields now with the potash demand, you know, the potassium demands of the plant are still very low, but we're already seeing potash deficiencies. And when we look at our soil samples, you know, we talk to producers, we sample a third of our fields every year. That's our recommendation. And when we look at our soil sample results, we got plenty of potash in the soil. But if you don't have the roots on a plant to take it up, well, then it's going to be lacking. And those are some of the things that we're seeing now. And because of the lack of soil structure, we don't have the root system on the plants that we need. And so we spend a lot of money on Band-Aids to overcome issues that we have to address problems related to a poor root structure. When if we fix our soil, our soil structure, then those problems would kind of go away. But so there's different things that we do. But really, all in all, I think, you know, we know cotton, we have the infrastructure here, our climate is great, our soil is great. And so cotton's still going to be here a while. You know, our cotton acres have dropped off. You know, when I came to Arkansas in 95, we routinely had around 1 million acres. That we dropped down. Our low was we had a few years ago down a little over 200,000 acres. But this year, we were hoping to have about 500,000 acres. The last USDA planted acres come in at like 441,000 acres. But our boll weevil eradication says there's 450,000 acres in the field right now. But we're just a little shy of 500,000 acres.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's interesting you brought that up, because you guys this year, we've talked about in some other places, weather has been kind of crazy for all of us. You know, Arkansas, Mid-South, yes. Delta, and some of that weather's been really crazy. And, you know, you mentioned talking about soil structure and stuff in Arkansas. And so our listeners know, one of the things you do a lot with is teaching farmers and teaching growers different things to do. And, you know, I've always admired your work because, you know, you guys hold a cotton sustainability field day. You guys do other work there. And I know sustainability has become very important. And so along those lines, I really, you know, just kind of find out from you, you know, do you have growers that ask you about sustainability? And when you're talking to them, how do you teach that concept to growers? And if there's any, you know, particular metrics or things that you stress, or, you know, when you really, you know, talk about sustainability to that farmer in the ag side of the supply chain?
Yeah. You know, farmers ask me about sustainability, but it may not be in the way that you think they might ask me about sustainability. Because, you know, if you step back and look, our producer leadership, you know, and I'm talking about the producers that are highly involved in the National Cotton Council, that are highly involved with the Cotton Board, highly involved with Cotton Incorporated, they get it, and they understand where the supply chain is coming from and the need for sustainability. But the lion's share of our producers, I feel like, really don't think that this is something that's going to impact them, because they just they think it's a way for somebody to get their cotton and a different way to market it to get more money for their cotton without paying them extra. And that's where a lot of people are. And so I really feel like in the things that I do, you know, when you look at being more sustainable is what the supply chain wants. There are things that we can do that have a positive impact on our bottom line. Now, farmers talk to me all the time about, okay, what can I do to be more profitable? And it's not that they're not interested in the environment or interested in being sustainable. Their main goal is to be in business next year. They're businessmen and business women. And so they want to be profitable. And so kind of part of my eye-opening experience working with the National Cotton Council is that I see that there's things that we can do to get the cotton that the supply chain wants, while at the same time helping the profitability of our cotton producers that are growing it. Because, you know, we've got to sell the cotton. You know, we're not going to eat cotton. You know, there are things available from the cotton seed and oil. And, you know, there's so many products that come from the seed. But basically, we've got to sell the cotton to somebody. And we want to get as good a price as we can. And so we've got to do what our customers, you know, we got to try to meet the needs of our customers. And so there's some things that we can do that I think get our customers what they want and then keep a little more money in our pocket at the end. But some of these things are so different, and it's hard to get producers to really see how this fits for them. And right now, some of the things that we're even doing in our research projects, we're not getting a job done. And so we've got a new project starting this year to try to figure out, okay, you know, because, you know, when you start a project or when you do research or even in integrated pest management, you know, evaluating what you did is part of it. So when we evaluate our research, you know, there's some things, some real issues we need to address. So we're trying to address those. And I think some of these, I think some of our practices are starting to be more common, but we still have a long ways to go.
And I think too, I think you probably hit on something because this is something I talk about a lot is that when you look at that supply chain, so you look at the growers at the beginning of it, when you talk about cotton, it's a different vocabulary or different set of terms or, you know, different conversation to talk about cotton. So they may be not, they might not ask, you know, about that sustainability, but, you know, I think you mentioned you're showing where irrigation and, you know, the soil structure there in Arkansas. So you really, you have the conversation, but it's maybe a little bit different vocabulary from what we maybe think a downstream supply chain might have around sustainability, because a lot of their stuff is like you said, hey, I want to be in business next year. How can I, you know, how can I, what might be an option? Is it, you know, cover crops? Is it not? Is it crop rotations? And I think it's a, you know, different conversation, but it's really this, you know, it's the same goal and strategy at the end. It's just like you said, it's just a different vocabulary, a different conversation.
Yeah. For some, the measure of success is reduced greenhouse gas emissions.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a farmer, what some, you know, there's, I'm a very visual person. I think most farmers are very visual people. But you know, things that I like to see is when we get a big rain, the water soaks in, it doesn't run off. And if we do have some runoff, the runoff is clear. And so there are things like that, there's kind of measures of success. But the biggest thing for me when I look at two things that we can do to decrease our environmental footprint, when you look at like the footprint calculator, reduce tillage and utilize cover crops, because they have a lot of impact on edge of field water quality, on water infiltration, and nutrient use and efficiency. Some of, you know, they have big impacts on a lot of different things directly and indirectly. But, you know, seeing, you know, like during the heat of the day, when you go out there, especially on farmers where we split a field and we get them to do on one side of the field, I tell them, do what you do on all your other cotton fields. On this other side, we're going to work with you to incorporate cover crops and reduce tillage to try to reduce your environmental footprint, which is what the supply chain wants, to be more sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we keep track of all your inputs, how many times you irrigate, or, you know, everything we do from start to finish. And we work with our economists to do a budget. And so we're going to try to increase profitability too. And so we look at those things and, you know, in cotton in a dry year, we've seen as much as a 10% increase in yield where we do cover crop and no tillage, because we get so much better water infiltration. That's the reason why I like to get farmers to go out to the field and look at it after a big rain. Because on the cover crop side and all that, it soaks the water up like a sponge. You go to the side, there's no cover crops. The water's standing in rows. The water's running off at the end of the field. Mm-hmm. We get a big rain because, you know, if you look at water infiltration rates on a silt loam soil, you know, if you go to textbooks and look at charts, it's about half an inch an hour. So when water soaks in the soil at that rate, half an inch an hour, well, it's no wonder when we get these big 2.5-3 inches of rain, it all runs off. It doesn't soak in.
Yeah, and that's something we really try to do.
Then we go to the cover crop side. Yeah, we go to the cover crop side and we take infiltration rates up to 6 to 8 inches an hour. It soaks in like a sponge. And so plants are just, you know, they grow roots, just kind of like us with skin cells, because we're skin cells are dying, skin cells are growing, we're growing new cells all the time. And so kind of think about that with roots on a plant. Those roots are growing, roots are dying all the time. Now in a cotton plant, our main root, the length of our root system gets about as long as it's ever going to get when we get to flowering. After that, the length of our root system is kind of constant. But when the soils get dry, the little root hairs that are like the diameter of your hair, those are the ones that are very sensitive to moisture. So when it gets dry, they die. And so when it gets wet again, then they regenerate, they grow new roots. And so the little bitty roots are the ones that are doing all the work. If you dig up a plant and look and you see the big roots, That's just the interstate highway. That's just transporting all the goods. All the, you know, you think of all the trucks inside that are carrying the water, and inside the water are the nutrients. So it's the little bitty hair, the little bitty root hairs that are doing all the work. Well, they're going to be where the moisture is. In our silt loam soils, it's so common when we get into the heat of the battle in our silt loam soils, we get a hard pan and we irrigate, and we only get about the top 6 inches wet. Well, that's where our roots are going to be during the periods of our greatest demand for moisture and nutrients. And it's like we almost handcuff our plants at that time of the year to get the water and the nutrients it needs. So that's why we see potash deficiency, because we don't have a root system. Now, I feel like, and we've measured this, where we do the cover crops and the no tillage, we triple and or even quadruple our effective rooting zone. And so when you have a way bigger area for a plant to get its water and nutrients, life is so much easier, so much better on that plant when you have a really deep root system. Because I've gone into fields where people have been using cover crops, and some of those, after a single rainfall event or a single irrigation, I'll take a soil probe and I go down 2 or 3 feet and have good soil moisture all the way down and see lots of cotton roots. In some of the fields where we do conventional tillage, I'll go out there right after an irrigation. Sometimes I'll hit dry soil about 6 to 8 inches down. And so where there's dry soil, those little bitty roots that are doing all the heavy lifting, they're not going to be there.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's something we've really done with our E3 program. So we use our digital platform, My Farms, which of course is kind of tied into field to market, but we also have even, you know, a lot more information we capture on every field and everything. And we have seen, you know, a lot of growers look at it and say, well, hey, how can I increase my sustainability score? And that's one of the things where, you know, what we try to do is when we show varieties, or, you know, our new varieties that come out every year. So some of our Stonebuller Fibromax varieties, it's, you know, we've incorporated some of that stuff into our field work with some of our growers to say, yeah, we want you to try a new variety and see how it yields and how it does. But then the same thing, like, hey, you know what? We have a phenomenal, like, and I can't brag on me enough. We have a rep, Seth Heron, who's in Mississippi, and Seth is doing some of that now with some growers and looking at it and showing them the pictures. And it's really been interesting. On one side, you know, they're doing a cover crop. The other side, they're doing, you know, they're regular the way they would do it. And it's really been interesting. And the excitement and the fun thing has been, he's had a lot of growers who are watching this field, and they'll call him up, Seth, you need to get out there and look at it, man, to see the difference. That's crazy. I dug up some of the root, you know, and, you know, we've put in moisture sensors to show some of that. And so, you know, and all that to say is, I think, you know, what you're doing there at University of Arkansas, we're hoping to, you know, expand it out to other areas as well, to incorporate it in with some of that, the things we're doing with our growers to help on the sustainability side as well. So, yeah,
but, you know, when the growers can go out in the heat of the day and decide that you know, the way they farm all their cotton, the plants, the leaves are wilting down, it's hot, the plants are thirsty, they're needing a drink of water. You go to the other side of the field and the leaves are standing up, the turgor, you know, the water pressure inside the plant is good, the plants are, the plants are feeling no pain, life is good. And so there's those big differences that you can see in the field through the year. And so those are things that really connect to producers, and then when we see a yield increase, then that's one of the big benefits. But, you know, when I look at some of these things, I think about, you know, when we do our conventional till and we don't have much of a cover crop, that cotton plant is having to do everything all by itself. And I like to use a lot of analogies. So I think of a situation like that, that's like a basketball team with one star player. And that star player is carrying the weight of the whole team. So then on the other side, where we have a cover crop, so we reduce tillage, we improve soil structure, we get better water infiltration, we got more organic matter, we got plant exudates that are feeding our soil microbes. So our soil microbes are there. And like mycorrhizae fungi with the hyphae can extend the root system of a plant several thousand times. And that's what really helps the plant get the P and the K they need, especially the phosphorus, the P. But there's things that we do there. So then when we have that cooperation between a lot of different things, it's like we have that basketball team with three really good players. And a basketball team with three really good players or four really good players, well, can outdo a team with just one star player. And so we got to build the teamwork. We got to build, you know, the several good players. Kind of where we are now, when I look at some of our research, we are building that teamwork, but then we're not taking advantage of that teamwork. So when we have all these other things going on to help that cotton plant do what it needs to do, when we triple or quadruple our effective rooting zone, well, we need to cut back on our fertilizer. There are things that we don't need to spend right. money on that we've traditionally always spent money on that it's hard for someone not to spend the money on. Mm-hmm. Because look at our economic situation where we are now. If we're not in Arkansas, especially, I think it's that way pretty much everywhere. But if we're not making record yields, then we're not paying the bills. If you look at our budgets and what our state average yield is, our state average yield last year was a little bit below 1,200 pounds. I think 1,185. But 1,185 barely pays our out-of-pocket expenses. We're not yes. contributing to management and overhead. And when we pay rent and some of these things like that, we're just barely paying out-of-pocket. So we have to be making record yields to be getting ahead. And so farmers are very reluctant to cut back on some things that they've always spent money on because we don't have the opportunity for failure. See, one of the things as a researcher, you know, if I try something different, something new, and it doesn't work, well, my paycheck's still the same.
Right. You know?
The farmer, if he tries something different and new and it doesn't work, well, he's going to be looking for a job in town. Because, you know, one bad year, it can take 5 years to overcome what one bad year can do.
And I think, you know, when you talk like downstream too, I think it's really, you know, and you guys may have done some of these economics. I was talking to someone the other day, when you break down, like you look at an acre of cotton and let's say, you know, some areas grow, or some parts of Texas where you were before, they might average, you know, 4 or 5 bale cotton, but we get in the Southeast or Mid-South and it might be 2 bale cotton or bale and a half, which will be, you know, 1,000 pounds or something. When you break it down per pound, the cost versus what a grower's get, you know, what they can get with the price of cotton is trading today versus what is required to be taking out of that per pound cost. And then you break down per pound. I mean, it's just pennies or cents that a grower might make on a pound of cotton. And the way the supply chain set up, you're right. Like it's not set up to help get additional value or revenue back to the growers. If someone downstream is using, you know, and able to make some claims and some marketing things on it. And so I think that you're right. Like everything we can do for those growers, I mean, it really is every penny helps.
But, you know, in a dry year, then a lot of times we can really jump yield by having better water infiltration, all that. That's where the big yield comes from. But in a wet year, then a lot of times we don't see a yield advantage. You know, but if you look at some of the things, some of the measures for soil health, if you look at some of our measures of our environmental footprint, we always improve that regardless whether it's a wet year or dry year. But the farmers, you know, looking at profitability. And so mm-hmm. what we have to do, we're trying to demonstrate to them that we're building a teamwork. And that's where some of the soil urinity thing comes in. But showing that there is that teamwork that we're building below the soil surface. But we need to take advantage of that teamwork so that we can spend less money on our crop. So if we make a little bit of yield, and I think over the long haul, we average about a 3-4% increase in yield. But then if we can decrease our production costs, that is where we're going to have a more consistent impact on profitability. And getting a producer comfortable on not spending money that they've always spent money on things.
Yeah.
And our current situation where if we're not making record yields and we're not gaining ground, we've got to try to overcome some of those problems, but just take advantage of the teamwork that we're building.
Hey, Bill, a question for you. Again, I'm looking at this from the perspective of the textile industry and the branded apparel industry. Because the global textile industry has moved out of the United States, it's all over the place. They use all kinds of different cottons, and they're all grown to very different specs, very different weather conditions, very different regulations. Even it just all depends. It's a mixed bag, and I think because of that, the industry tends to be into labels to kind of simplify and demonstrate how they're being sustainable. Okay, for lack of a better word, or green, you know. And so forth. One of the buzzwords that's come up lately, and I'd be interested in your take on this, because I think you've been talking all about it through this conversation, but mm-hmm. Is the word regenerative.
Yes.
Okay. And again, it's kind of an old term, but now all of a sudden to hear the textile industry talk about it, it's like something that's been discovered recently. So,
yeah.
So I was wondering if you wouldn't mind take a second and talk about that.
Yeah. Because, you know, we've got some producers here in Arkansas that they're just really big into regenerative ag. And that's, you know, we're building things. And so if you visit with them about sustainability, then they say, well, sustainability is just kind of staying constant. Regenerative ag is making things better. And so I think still the teamwork thing that I'm talking about, I think is still a big part of the regenerative ag. There's things that we can do, you know, when we look at what we can do to improve soil health is to arm our soil, to keep it covered. And there's different things that we have an impact on with soil temperature. But, you know, think about, and I don't know if everybody can relate to this, but even just walking barefoot on a pavement or a sidewalk when it's really hot, you know, it's so hot that you can't hardly stand to walk on there. On our bare soils, it's so hot just like that, you can't hardly stand to walk barefooted on a bare soil. Okay, if you look at where all of our living matter in the soil is, they're in the top few inches, in the top 2 or 3 inches where the majority of it is. So if it's too hot to walk barefooted on that, how are our soil microbes going to live in that? So keep the soil covered, have living roots in the soil as many months of the year as we can. To because there's, you know, I was very surprised when I started getting into this, and it seemed like I remember in college we talked about root exudates and the importance of root exudates, but that kind of got lost in a lot of other things that kind of get lost in the back of my mind because that wasn't something I thought about very much. But it's very surprising to me that such a high percent, like when corn or when, like even with cotton, when it's very active growing, is as much as almost 50% of the photosynthate or the sugars that the plant makes leaks out the root system. And so, you know, so the plants are farming the soil microbes underneath because the roots, the plants can sense what organisms are there. And then based on what they leak out to our soil microbes, they can solicit different responses from them based on what the plant needs are. And so it's like they're farming the microbes under there. So there's different things going on, but having living roots in the soil as many months out of the year as you can. And then having diversity. You know, we have diversity in our cash crops and we have diversity in our cover crops. And so we build that up and then not destroy that. But then another thing that we do on there is to add livestock. Because livestock, you know, when we graze our cover crops and do some of those things, although, you know, having livestock is not the sole difference to make regenerative ag, but I think having livestock as part of your farming system is, I think, a big part of regenerative ag from what I see and the benefits that we get. But really, it's just kind of making things better. We think about, you know, like here in Texas and Arkansas where the buffalo roam and all that, you know, we didn't fertilize that grass. They came through, they did specific grazing times, what they didn't eat, they trampled in the ground, and just it's part of that carbon cycle. And so keeping some of those things going back to nature, I guess, some of that is part of regenerative ag. And you know, I'm just kind of rambling on here a little bit, I guess. But
no, but I think it's important.
I think regenerative ag is very important. And it's part of kind of where I feel like I'm coming from on some of this. We've kind of gotten trained by thinking that production is key. And in a sense, you know, when you look at cotton or you look at corn or you look at rice or you look at soybeans, you know, yield equals profit. And that's true for the most part. But I think what we need to do is really concentrate more on profitability. And most of the people that I really feel like that are part of this regenerative ag movement and are looking at that, they're focusing more on profitability than they are on yield. And I think that's the direction that we're going to have to go. I think some of our other industries have done that to some degree. you know, we used to, you know, like the cattle industry is gone more to looking at profit than they do production, especially in a sense. But I feel like, you know, when we get into regenerative ag and some of these things, our highest yield may not be our necessarily be our number one goal. Profitability is going to be our number one goal. Okay. Most farmers that I know own a very small percent of the land they farm. And I think I've heard numbers that somewhere, you know, an average across all farmers, about 2/3 of the ground that most farmers farm, they rent. And are they lease, or they have some, they don't own that ground. So number one thing, landlords, we're going to have to keep the landlords happy. So if the landlords own a crop share rent, which is probably most common in Arkansas, probably, you know, a common rental agreement in Arkansas on cotton is the landowner gets 20% of the crop and there's no cost share. So, you know, the farmer has 100% of the cost of growing all the cotton. The landlord gets 20% of the cotton. So if his cost were 60 cents a pound, well, do the math on that. And then the next thing you know, his costs are, what, 80 cents a pound?
On the cotton,
because he has all the costs, but he only has 80% of the cotton. And so you have to think about some of that. But the bottom line is our landlords, you know, our absentee landlords, they're removed from the farm several years. And while most people want their land to be better, that, you know, we've got, you know, there's a lot of folks out there that their main objective is drawing that rent check.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and because they're counting on that rent check.
Yeah.
And if you are not producing, you know, like if you're looking trying to maximize profitability, well, the maximizing yield may not fit in the same sentence. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or we may maximize profitability at a lower yield. So that landlord share of that lower yield is not as good. And they may say, well, these are the yields I'm expecting to see. If you're not going to give me these yields, I've got a list of other farmers that have been asking to farm that land. I'm going to let them farm it.
Yeah.
So it's very competitive. Land is very competitive. And so we got to keep the landlords happy too. So we may have to do, you know, our rental agreements. Some of those things may have to change a little bit to really be able to have profitability as our main objective. So what we're trying to do in some of our research is what can we do to reduce cost, but not have a negative impact on yield? How far can we go and try to find a happy medium on that? And so those are some of the things that we're trying. And we're, you know, this is the first year on some of these projects, and there's some things that we tried that I don't think are what we really need to do.
Yeah.
So luckily we're not doing this on too many, and we've got a little bit of freedom to fail, even though we're doing it in a producer field, that we're on farms that, you know, part of a farming foundation and they want to do research. And so they're going to help us. They're going to help the producer out a little bit on rental agreements and some of those things. So, but I think looking down the road, those, there's some things that we've got to do to shift our focus from production to profitability. And I think regenerative ag is going to be a big key in that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking the time today, Dr. Robertson and Bob as well. And I think I probably have a whole laundry list of other questions as we go into some other sustainability metrics, but I think we're about out of time. So don't worry. Our listeners can know that we will definitely be asking you to come back.
Oh, that's
so
great.
yeah. Again, I do appreciate it. Appreciate your help so much on everything. And then, you know, Dr. Robertson, if any of our listeners have any questions or have, you know, anything, want to learn more about your research or what you guys are doing, where's the best place for them to get that information?
Yeah. Of course, you know, always can reach me by email, which is brobertson, RobertSon, @uada.edu. And I'm also on Twitter @arcottonman. And awesome. Those are probably the two best places to catch me.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate so much that Robertson. And again, you know, thank you for all the work that you're doing. We really do appreciate it. And I'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us, and hope that you enjoyed our show. Did you have any questions about the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program? You know, please email me at e3cotton@basf.com. Also, please visit us on Instagram and Facebook at E3 Sustainable Cotton. Thanks so much, and see you next time.